You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
And welcome to the latest edition of College Gridiron 365 podcast. I'm Brant Parsons with Matt Marshall. It is our weekly look ahead, but due to the scheduling and everything from last week, by Sunday morning there were still two games to be played and we didn't get a chance to talk about them. And both of them very, very good games. Of course, talking about Texas and Notre Dame on Sunday night and Monday night here in Orlando, Florida State and Ole Miss with a comeback that worked in that game, a comeback that didn't sustain in the Sunday night game. Let's start locally. Let's start with Florida State, a game you were at, Matt, on Monday night, a game that you probably are still trying to recover from as far as rest, but a tale of two halves. I know that's used a lot in things in sports, but this truly was maybe a tale of 25 minutes and then 35 minutes. But Florida State looked just like a warm-up team for Ole Miss for the first quarter and a half of that game. Got down very deep, 28-6, before rallying, scoring, I think, 30 straight points at one point, winning the game by 9 points, and showing what we thought that they had on defense eventually, and showing some new signs on offense that we thought could be there, but waiting to see, especially in DeAndre Francois. But first, Matt, your thoughts. We haven't had a chance to talk about your thoughts from being at that game Monday night, Orlando on stage, and just a wonderful way to kick off the college football season on Labor Day evening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you talk about that game, tail of two halves. I think it was really a lot about adjustments. You know, I think Ole Miss came out very much on fire, went with that tempo that they're favor a lot in their offense. Chad Kelly was able to move the ball down the field pretty much with ease. Florida State didn't get any sort of defensive push, no pressure on Kelly. He was able to find his receivers and get the ball down the field. That's why they jumped out to that 28-6 lead going into late in the second quarter. But then I think Florida State kind of started to figure things out a little bit, started to get a little bit of calm themselves down. I think DeAndre Francois, who didn't look bad in that first half, just didn't really move the ball as effectively as I think people thought he was going to do, started to get into a rhythm. They went into halftime. Probably the worst thing that could happen for Ole Miss was going into the half, because once they came out in the third quarter, Florida State really kind of found its rhythm. That's something Jimbo Fisher always seems to do a really good job of, is making those adjustments. They found their rhythm. They were able to get pressure on Kelly. He made some bad mistakes, an interception and a fumble to start the third quarter. Florida State took advantage of it and started to score, started scoring points, and then really that was the end of it. You know, Florida State cruised to the win. Francois was able to, I think, get out of the pocket more, was able to move the ball a little bit better, found some receivers. And then on a night when Dalvin Cook really did look like Dalvin Cook that we're used to seeing, no big breakaway runs, they were able to get the job done and win a convincing game against a top 15 opponent.
And we're going to talk a little bit about Francois in a second, but the defense, you touched upon the difference in this game that I felt was no pressure in the beginning, Chad Kelly all sorts of time. And if you look at that stretch in the third quarter when everything changed, when Florida State scored three times in, the first, 6 minutes of the third quarter, it seemed, it was because of the defense. It was because of pressure on the quarterback, forcing Ole Miss into mistakes, and the offense feeding off that defense, the defense feeding off that offense. And we talk so much about, what Jimbo Fisher does, and he's one of the best at making adjustments, and they made adjustments on both sides of the ball with the defense probably playing a little bit off that late touchdown in the first half, but coming out on fire, forcing Ole Miss into uncomfortable places, forcing the two turnovers. Next thing you know, Florida State is in the lead. It's a home crowd basically by that point, all the momentum, and really that changed the game and allowed Francois and the offense to settle into themselves in that second half, because the defense was making such huge plays. And that was just, to me, that was the key. As much as the offense kind of finding its rhythm was helpful, but that defense, the way they came out in that the beginning of that third quarter, just changed the complexity of the game and maybe changed the narrative of the college football landscape, because Florida State went from being, oh my God, I can't believe they're ranked fourth, to, hey, you know, this is one of the few teams that might be able to hang with Alabama just because of how that defense showed finally the talent, the play to match up with that talent.
Yeah, you know, I think what part of that was, too, is that the defense was a little bit back on its heels in the first half. I mean, we talk about tempo all the time with a lot of these teams. I think it really did throw them off. You know, I don't think Chad Kelly really, if you were to, you know, look at the time, you know, from him taking the snap to the time of him getting rid of the ball, it was a pretty short amount of time, a few seconds. I don't think Florida State, it's hard to replicate that in practice sometimes. You know, they're not that kind of offense. And I think that maybe that caught them a little bit off guard. Plus, it's the first game. You know, some of these kids, you know, haven't really gone up against another, besides themselves and their teammates, they haven't really had an opportunity to go up against any other team. So to have that, you know, adjustment, I think, was a little bit. And I think in the case of Francois, what impressed me was, I think early on, I think he was pressing just a little bit, you know, to try to find receivers. I think he stayed in the pocket a little too long. And I think in the third quarter, you could see when the pressure was starting to get there, he would kind of roll out and take advantage of his legs. I think he had a couple really big runs in the third quarter that really kind of opened things up a little bit, because then the defense realized, okay, now we gotta you know, make sure we account for him as a rusher. And that kind of changed things up, and then it opened up the passing attack. And as you mentioned, the crowd was always in this game. After about, you know, midway through the second quarter, the crowd really got boisterous and really kind of, you know, spurred on this team. And I think it really got in the head of Ole Miss a little bit. I know the players, the Rebel players, tried to discount that, but it's hard to imagine this was supposed to be a neutral site game, because it was about 75% Florida State fans. And I think, you know, again, you know, those all those factors kind of rolled into one, eventually wore out Ole Miss, and Florida State got the victory.
We're going to talk about freshman debuts at quarterback and sticking with this game and DeAndre Francois. Everybody wants to compare him to Jameis Winston, and I guess maybe it's because they're both freshmen or maybe even the color of their skin, but I don't see much connection between the two beyond those things. Jameis Winston had more of the traditional quarterbacking talent. Francois, a faster quarterback, showed it with the two long runs, as you talked about. He finished the night 59 yards total rushing, threw the ball more than Jameis Winston did in his debut, 52 passes, 419 yards. Different players, but there's that comparison. I guess that'll always be there. But this is a guy that's going to make a name for himself. And I think by week three or four this year, they may no longer even be comparing him to Jameis Winston. He's going to be DeAndre Francois because of his skill set. But as you talked about, he almost matured into the role during the game. And you can imagine what it was like for him playing in front of that crowd, playing his first collegiate game in his hometown. He's from Orlando. He went to Olympia High School. Friends and family, everything that kind of compounded. And he did not look terrible in that first half, but he certainly looked on par with the best quarterbacks in college football in that second half. And to get that, I guess that's the comparison to Winston, to get that poise from a redshirt freshman was very impressive to see. And obviously, Florida State fans, if there was one question you had going into this season, it was at quarterback. And he certainly, at least for one game against the number 11 team in the country, alleviated some of those fears. Matt, talk about what you saw from him in that first game against Ole Miss, from what you saw from the redshirt freshman.
Well, I think, you know, when you talk about the comparison between him and Jameis Winston, I was there for Jameis Winston's debut, you know, back in 2013 in Pittsburgh. And that was just a special evening because, you know, if you remember right, Winston opened up, you know, completing his first, I think it was maybe 18 to 20 passes. It was like 20 for 20, you know, 19 for 19, something like that. And I think people started feeling like, you know, you could see that there was something special there. He was making some great dynamic throws. We didn't get that from Francois early on. But I think what you got instead was a quarterback who was able to kind of utilize his skill set, you know, a little bit better, you know, able to find the open receiver, you know, had some really nice touches on the ball, was able to get out of the pocket, able to make some runs, make some guys miss. That's critical, you know, when you're a quarterback, especially a mobile quarterback. You know, and I think he didn't get rattled. He didn't make mistakes. You know, he didn't get to the point where he was, you know, pressing and trying to do things that he wasn't able to do. And I think a couple times, listen, this kid's a tough kid because he sat in the pocket. There was a couple times he took some really major hits, some really crushing blows. I think once it was maybe in the end of the first half, he took a really big hit on that touchdown pass and got up and looked a little bit banged up, still came out and performed. So, you know, one thing Jimbo Fisher has always had a knack for doing is working with quarterbacks and getting them to be, you know, ready, prepared for these kind of games and getting them moving forward. And I think the nice thing that Fisher does is he doesn't let them get into the hype. He doesn't let them believe it and get to the point where they become too big, get too big of a head, especially going into the next couple games, because you know that after this opening performance that there's so much talk about Francois, and you know people are going to ask him about it. For now, you know, I mean, Jimbo wants him to be grounded, I'm sure, as he gets into this opening week, this next weekend. You know, it's not against a stellar opponent, but again, still, you don't want him to get too big of a head.
And guys like you have him on Heisman watches now, so it's going to be a tough job for Jimbo.
Well, week one. I mean, you know, week one Heisman drive, and again, you know, just
you're not wrong though. I'm pointing out that the expectation is going to be there now, and rightly or wrongly, it's there, and it's from legitimate sources that are putting that expectation on him.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that from a lot, especially if they continue to win and he continues to have a strong performance, I think he's going to get a lot more attention. And I think that's something that you're going to see, and I think that's something that Fisher's done a good job of, you know, trying to make sure that that kind of thing doesn't happen in the past. And I think also his teammates will help him out. You know, eventually at some point, we know Dalvin Cook's going to return to the Dalvin Cook that we're used to seeing last season. I think that's going to help alleviate a little bit of pressure on him as well. And I think, again, you know, the defense, if it plays anywhere near like it did in the second half against Ole Miss, that's going to be helpful as well. And let's not forget, as they move down their schedule, they got some big games against Louisville and against Clemson. Those are going to be premier primetime national audience, you know, type games. And that's really when you're going to see him get an opportunity to kind of showcase himself.
And one last thing on him. I finally saw the FSU preview or premiere last night on Showtime, and fascinating look at Jimbo Fisher and how he does handle his quarterbacks, how he's handled DeAndre Francois, even during the game and meetings. It's just fascinating. I'm so glad that the cameras are being allowed in there to get to see that, because it's something even us in the media, we don't get to see a lot of, especially with programs like FSU, but really telling to see Jimbo Fisher and how he deals with Francois. There's another freshman quarterback debut over the weekend that we didn't get a chance to talk about when we recorded our last podcast on Sunday morning, and that took place in Austin, Texas. Shane Buechele. You and I talked about him more than a few times over the offseason, how key he was going to be for Texas's success. You didn't think the seat was hot for Charlie Strong. I maybe thought it was a little bit hotter. I'm going to back off of that now. Texas gets the big lead on Notre Dame, gives up the big lead against Notre Dame, but then pulls off the win. So many things to talk about with this Texas team, but you got to start. One of our side topics we wanted to discuss is some of these freshman debuts, and certainly there was one there in Texas.
Yeah, you know, Shane Buechele, we knew going into this game, was probably going to get the start, probably going to get the opportunity to play a lot of downs, because he really came into this, he was one of the star recruits of Charlie Strong's 2016 class, and, you know, with Sterling Gilbert taking over as the new offensive coordinator, you know, Shane Buechele played in a similar sort of offensive set in high school that Gilbert wants to run at Texas, and I think that all saw that kind of culminate, you know, in that game against Notre Dame. He was able to really kind of move the ball downfield, had a strong arm, made some big throws downfield, made good decisions, you know, only threw one interception, had one other that was dropped that probably would have been another interception, but still looked really good, and you saw that offense put over 50 points up on the board. I mean, we haven't seen a Texas off, you know, under Charlie Strong have a game like that in forever, it seems like. This team now legitimately looks like a contender in the Big 12. The only concern I would have would be, you know, the defense. You know, I mean, I felt like they gave up a lot of points, a lot of yards to Notre Dame, and you're playing in a conference like the Big 12. You're going to see a lot of teams run those spread offenses, the Oklahomas, the Baylors, TCU, you know, so you're going to have to figure out a way how to slow that down. But Shane Buechele making a you know, really a victorious debut. I'm guessing we're probably going to see more good things come out of this freshman quarter.
And I'm not going to beat around the bush. This is first week overreaction. I don't see Texas as a Big 12 contender yet, and that's not to knock this win or even to knock how good Notre Dame is, but you look at Texas, as you talk about, they still have some questions on defense and such. But this was a great debut for him, and it doesn't hurt that he can take a break and they can bring in the 18-wheeler. Tyrone Swoops, the change of pace when he came into that game, I thought, and that's a credit to Charlie Strong for figuring that out, bringing him in and changing that complexion of the game to where Notre Dame really didn't have an answer for him at times. And maybe over the, you know, as the season goes on, other teams will be more prepared for that. But I thought that for this game, for week one, that was a heck of a coaching move by Strong to kind of throw that wrinkle in, and it really played havoc with the Fighting Irish defense.
Well, let's remind our listeners that, you know, Charlie Strong did coach on the same staff with a guy named Urban Meyer, who, when they won their national championship at Florida, had Chris Leak at quarterback, and then went in with a certain Tim Tebow as a kind of the similar, maybe earlier version of the 18-wheeler, so to speak, 15-wheeler, I guess you would call it, and did the same sort of thing, you know, at Florida the year that they won the national championship, you know, the first one. And I think that's a very similar skill set, you know, very similar offensive set that we saw there. You know, you bring in a change of pace, you bring in a guy who can throw the ball a little bit and Swoops, you can run the ball mostly. He's going to probably be in a lot of those situations. I wouldn't be shocked at some point down the road we see Swoops maybe do a fake run, you know, type of, you know, passing situation in those goal line, you know,
jump pass
exactly. So I mean, I don't think Charlie Strong, you know, that wasn't anything new. I think he kind of had that thought process in mind going back to those days with Urban. I know talking to Strong a couple of years ago, he mentioned that him and all the coaches from that Florida staff still talk, you know, pretty regularly. And my guess is he's probably spoken to Urban and Steve Adazio at Boston College and probably started thinking about that kind of situation way before this happened. But again, it's a great change of pace. It's a great use of a two-quarterback system. Unlike Notre Dame, which had a two-quarterback system that didn't work at all, except for DeShone Kizer.
And the Florida comparisons are great because that really what it is when you, if you think about it, that's what it looked like that year that Tebow really all he did was come in and run off left tackle and you knew it was coming and you couldn't stop it and it didn't really mess with Leak. Leak was the quarterback. The Notre Dame situation is a whole other animal. You have two quarterbacks, similar skill sets and battling it out, but this was just a guy coming in, knew what his job was, and did it because he was just a bruiser, and certainly a big win for Texas, 50-47, double OT upset of Notre Dame. Before we move on to looking ahead, which is what we want to do on this podcast, we have to look back at one of the major storylines of week one, and after Monday night, the SEC finished the week 7-7. Six of those losses coming in non-conference games. Of course, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, an automatic win and an automatic loss for the conference there. But six losses to non-conference opponents. I believe it was 1955 was the number I saw the last time the SEC had a week as bad as this one. And certainly, it could be a one-time deal. It could be a sign that maybe college football is either catching up or a lot of the SEC is coming back to the pack. You had big wins, obviously. You had Alabama blowing out USC. You had Georgia and Nick Chubb with a fantastic comeback win over North Carolina in a game between ranked opponents. And then you had the other side. And you know, the losses and the close games and kind of the embarrassing things, Kentucky getting outscored at home to Southern Miss and even Arkansas barely beating Louisiana Tech and Mississippi State losing to South Alabama. And so you can say some of the losses are legit with the Ole Miss loss, the Florida State, the Auburn loss to Clemson. But like I said, some of those losses uncharacteristic for big Power Five conference, especially for the SEC. I know you're not as sky is falling as I am on this, but your reaction from the SEC's first weekend and what it says going forward for the conference.
Well, I mean, I always look at week one. It's not just the SEC, but I look at week one as, you know, the idea that sky is falling type mentality people have is, it's a little too early for that. I think, you know, we talked about this before on our College Football Now show. You know, Ohio State went through this a couple of years ago. They lose to Virginia Tech right out of the gates that one season, and everyone's like, oh, woe is Ohio State, and they're, you know, they're done. And then they went on to win the national title. So, I mean, you know, I don't see that so much of the case this season. I think there were some bad losses for this league. And I think, and I ran into SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey at the FSU Ole Miss game, and I asked him about this. And he said, you know, listen, when our league has a bad weekend, you know, obviously it's one of the top storylines in college football. But he wanted to, like you would expect him to do, he wanted to promote all the good they did with the Alabamas, you know, Texas A&M, Georgia, you know, big wins over ranked opponents. So I tend to somewhat agree on that aspect, but on the other aspect, I mean, there were some really bad losses. You know, it's, you know, Kentucky's loss, you know, to Southern Miss was a bad loss. Mississippi State losing on a, you know, with a bad field goal at the end, that was a bad loss. Tennessee coming out and having a really bad, you know, not a loss, but just a bad performance. I don't think it's sky is falling for the SEC. I just think it was a rough weekend. You and I both said this yesterday. If they come out this weekend and they all win and they go 12-1 or whatever, 13-1, whatever it is, eventually this all kind of dies down and you know, eventually until they get into a couple weeks. But it's definitely something to watch, and I think because the fact that college football is changing, I think because we're seeing opening weekends getting tougher. You know, it used to be you scheduled your cupcakes week one, two, three, you know, your non-conference cupcakes, so you kind of got into your conference schedule play, you know, maybe being 3-0 or 4-0. But now we're seeing those change. We're seeing the fact you have to add Power 5 opponents. We're seeing schools adding these neutral site matchups with big opponents because they know it helps their strength of schedule. So it may seem bad in one way, but another way, I think the league was trying to help its improve. Unfortunately, it didn't do a very good job this weekend.
And I'm going to disagree somewhat with you. I think I've been saying this for a few years, obviously, and getting some heat, but I think this is symbolic of the SEC, and there has not been development of quarterbacks throughout the league. I felt last year, beyond Alabama, you had average to above average teams. You didn't have a bunch of great teams as you had in years past in the SEC, where it was still top heavy, but it was top heavy with a couple. Right now, the SEC is top heavy with one team, Alabama, and it might be the top heaviest out there. Alabama looks like it might be the best team in the country yet again this season, and if that plays out, they win, and certainly the SEC takes credit for that championship. But when you look at even last year, and the demise of LSU and the fact that your East winner was Florida, who was blown away by Michigan and struggled against Florida State. And you look across the landscape this year in the SEC, and other than Alabama, you're going to be hard-pressed to find that second elite team. We thought it was going to be LSU. Their offensive concerns were not fixed. Brandon Harris has not changed to where he's a quarterback to make them elite, in my opinion. They struggled in a pseudo neutral site game against Wisconsin before ultimately losing that game. Auburn, obviously not there yet. They're having problems on offense. You look to the East, everybody thought maybe Tennessee could be the team this year, and they still might be. They struggled in second halves last year. This year they start struggling against Appalachian State, which is a tough team, but certainly if you're a top-tier SEC team, you should be beating Appalachian State. Florida did not look that great in their win over UMass. Again, a team that could still turn things around and is young in offensive skill positions. And Georgia with the win. So maybe Georgia is your second-tier SEC team or your second-best SEC team right now, but even if you look at them, at least from my vantage point, I don't see them as being one of the top teams in the country. And you could always count on the SEC having 2-3 teams most of the season. You could talk about being into that playoff without question. And I think right now, other than Alabama, I don't see a team in the SEC that can compete up on that level. Again, it's 1 week, but I think it's symbolic looking back to last year also. And I didn't see the depth in the conference last year either, beyond Alabama. And I think part of it is there just has not been quarterback development in the SEC. And it's there. If you're Alabama, you can get away with it. But I think it's starting to catch up. And other schools, at smaller schools and other conferences, are starting to mimic that SEC model of speed and talented athletes everywhere. And I think it's caught up. And the pack has returned, except for Alabama.
Well, I mean, I agree a little bit with you, but I also think, again, it's week one, Brant. I mean, it's one.
I'm looking back to last year.
No,
too.
No. I mean, I understand that, but you know, your argument doesn't, you know, carry so much weight when you think about like Ohio State from a couple of years ago. I mean, when Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech, there was the woe is me on the Big Ten. Every conference goes through this. Every conference goes through a stretch where they aren't as dominant, and then because it's the SEC, and because the fact that they always seem to be the conference that everyone puts at the top. And because of the fact they had six teams in the top 25 going into this week, this first week, whenever they lose, when they have they have a bad weekend, it's going to be bad. Now, if they come out and a couple of these teams lose, if Tennessee loses to Virginia Tech this weekend, obviously Arkansas is probably going to lose to TCU. If Florida stumbles against Kentucky, I mean, those are then opportunities where you can look at and say, well, there isn't a strong showcase. And I agree with you at this moment. There is nobody outside Alabama in the SEC that looks solid at this point. But I mean, give it two or three weeks, and we could be, we could be talking about having two SEC teams in the playoffs. So I'm not ready to write the SEC off yet. I do agree in the sense that there has been little to no quarterback development. I think part of that is because of the fact that a lot of these quarterbacks have left early. They got a lot of guys who left. I mean, Florida's a great example. I mean, Florida hasn't developed a quarterback in 4 or 5 years, since the Urban Meyer years, basically. So I think there are some issues there as well, but I don't necessarily think it means, I think the other leagues are catching up, but I think it's also cyclical. I think, at some point it's one league's down, one league would be up. At some point the SEC will be down again, and at some point, it'll find its way back up. It's just part of the way the college football landscape works.
But don't worry, SEC fans, there's plenty of room on that Alabama cape. You can ride that if need be as the season goes on. You talked about Virginia Tech and Tennessee, and this is a portion of the podcast where we'll start looking forward. And this is not a weekend that has the same excitement, the automatic excitement built into it like week one. There is not a single game this weekend between two top 25 teams in the AP. There's only one top 25 team that's even on the road this weekend, and that's on Friday night when Louisville visits Syracuse. Every other top 25 team is at home or off. There are very few intriguing battles or matchups in this weekend. And I mean, when the game that stands out is Virginia Tech Tennessee, and that's the only one you can think of as a marquee game, and it might only be marquee game because they're playing on a car racing track in the middle of 150,000 people. But these are the weekends sometimes that sneak up on you, and you end up having some great games and some tremendous outcomes. But let's talk about that game, the main game. Expecting 150,000 people at Bristol Motor Speedway to watch Virginia Tech and Tennessee. Virginia Tech showed that they still can play defense under Bud Foster. 4 turnovers. They scored a safety in their opener against Liberty. And then you have Tennessee coming in, all the expectations. They got the most important thing in their opener, which was a W. But now it's time to turn the page and start building toward what Tennessee thinks they should be, what we thought they should be, and they get that chance on this crazy Saturday night at a racetrack against Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I think this is one of those games. One thing I would watch early on is a little bit of the nerves, the first quarter, the first couple drives, because it's going to be weird. It's going to be weird for these kids to be playing in an infield of a giant motor speedway. It's much bigger. The acoustics are going to be a little bit different, obviously. The setup is a little bit different. They had to bring in sand to lay down before they put the field down, and you've got fans who are a little bit farther away than they normally are. They're not going to be on top of you like you are in some stadiums. So I think in the first couple drives, you're going to see a little bit just of a different, maybe a little bit of nerves from these these kids, you know, because it's going to be a different experience, something they're not used to seeing. But, you know, this is in Tennessee, so you'd expect this to be a really a home game, so to speak, for the Volunteers. Listen, what we saw from out of Tennessee against Appalachian State, if they have to fix their offensive line woes. I mean, Josh Dobbs was pressured way too much early on in that game, really didn't have an opportunity to find his rhythm as a quarterback. I think he was pressured eight to ten times, really wasn't able to get the offense moving like we were expected to see. And then I felt like defensively they underestimated Appalachian State. I think they thought Appalachian State was just going to kind of lay down as a Sun Belt team. And we knew they were a good team because they won 11 games the year before. So I think there's some things that Tennessee has to do. I think this is a good matchup in the sense that Virginia Tech, as you mentioned, defensively is going to go after Josh Dobbs. They're going to make him, you know, try to carry the ball, carry the onus of the offense on his shoulders, which he can't do because if he does that, Tennessee is going to lose this game.
Other games this weekend, Florida State hosts Charleston Southern. We've already touched enough on that. We've even touched upon Florida, Kentucky. UCF visits the Big House against Michigan. Will probably be the largest crowd UCF's ever played in front of it. Should beat the record that was set when they were visit Ohio State back in 2012. I want to talk about this because they are the home team, and this is a nationally televised game. It's going to be noon. Kickoff on ABC, Michigan coming off an overly impressive win over Hawaii. UCF started slow, got their impressive win over South Carolina State, obviously a different level of opponent, but certainly the same kind of win. What do you expect to see out of UCF? What are you looking to see out of UCF as they hit the road for really their first chance to kind of make a statement, not necessarily a statement with a win? Obviously, that would be beyond, I think, any hope at this point. But the first real statement for the new era that's begun at UCF, what are you hoping to see from UCF against Michigan on Saturday?
Well, you know, just a little bit more consistency. I think you mentioned it early on against South Carolina State. You know, they didn't have the kind of consistency I'm sure Scott Frost wanted offensively. You know, they had four field goals. I think they need to do that kind of thing. You know, they need to come out and really kind of move the ball down the field. They have to avoid turnovers. They can't have any mistakes against Michigan. I think this defense is you know, one of the best defenses that's out there. I think Don Brown, the Michigan defensive coordinator, is one of the best at his job. You know, they're going to try to get to Justin Holman. They're going to try to confuse him. They're going to try to put pressure on him. You know, Justin did a good job of getting out of the pocket last week. You can run the ball a little bit, some design runs. I think they need to score. If UCF is going to have a chance in this game, they need to take the crowd out of the game early on. Because, like you mentioned, it's 100,000 fans in this stadium. You got to get the crowd out of the game early on. You got to control the tempo of the game, whether it's up tempo or whatever. You've got to control the tempo. And then on the defensive side of the ball, you got to continue to attack. You've got to get turnovers. You've got to force Michigan to make mistakes. You know, Wilton Sprite had his debut last week. You got to force him to maybe make a couple bad throws for interceptions. You're going to force some fumbles as well. I think if they can do that early on, they can stay in this game. Eventually, you know, you hope that your speed will wear down Michigan, but I don't know how that's going to happen. And nothing against UCF. I just think that Michigan's a bigger and better team at this point.
And maybe take advantage of that 12 o'clock start. Maybe the crowd will be late to get excited.
But either way, this is a game that this is a great game for UCF because it's a noon kick, prime time. You know, we talked about it's going to be an ABC. You get to show your program. You get Scott Frost gets to go out there and showcase the UCF program, and that's going to be huge, especially when you're in the process of trying to get yourselves into the Big 12. You're in the process of trying to get some good recruits. The recruits are going to watch this game, so all this is a big factor. Even if you get a loss in this, which is I'm sure Scott Frost will say it's not a good thing, but I think in a way it is because you get to showcase your program. I think that's going to help them in the long run.
Looking at across the schedule, I struggled this week to find games for us to pick, but are there any games or game that stands out for you that you're looking forward to seeing this Saturday?
A couple ones. Arkansas TCU, not to go back in the SEC, but, again, we talked about how the SEC was a rough start. TCU, struggled a little bit, obviously, in their opener against an FCS opponent. Gave up over 40 points. You know, I want to see how they can handle a team like Arkansas. Kenny Hill has obviously faced them before when he played quarterback at Texas A&M a few years back and transferred into TCU. That's an interesting matchup for me. Another one that's not going to get any buzz pretty much whatsoever is Arkansas State at Auburn. You know, because, and again, both these teams aren't ranked, but Auburn is interesting because they're having troubles, you know, with their offense. They can't seem to decide on a quarterback. Is it going to be Sean White? Is it going to be someone else? They're struggling. They got to figure that situation out. They're facing an Arkansas State team that's coming off a big loss. You know, if Arkansas State makes this game close, we know Auburn's got a much better defense, but if Arkansas State makes this game close, you got to wonder how much pressure is Gus Malzahn going to start to really feel, in that situation, because again, people want to know what's going on. You know, is he got this program back on the right track or not?
I'm walking eggshells around my Auburn friends and colleagues because I agree with you. I think this is a game ripe for them to stumble coming off that Clemson game where they felt that they had a chance, and really they probably did have a chance if they were, had been able to establish any sort of continuity on offense. But Arkansas State, no pushover. Could be an interesting game on the plains. The game I'm looking forward to, and much like the UCF-Michigan game, I don't see this game as an upset potential, but I see it as a uncomfortableness potential, and that's Western Kentucky against Alabama. Interesting fact on this, Matt, Western Kentucky has played Alabama three times. This is the second time they will have played Alabama following an Alabama national championship and Alabama's home opener after Alabama opened the season with a neutral site game in Arlington. How's that for a factoid for you? But I Western, we talked about it on our video yesterday where we make our picks, and Western Kentucky, to me, would be one of the teams we'd be talking about if there wasn't a Houston from the group of five as one of the teams that could play their way into a New Year's Day Six Bowl. Obviously, Houston has that conversation wrapped up for the time being, but Western Kentucky, no slouch. Jeff Brohm has done an incredible job with that offense there in Western Kentucky. They have a experienced laden offensive line, top receivers, and a running back, a quarterback who looked good in his first game. The past couple of years, they've had 2,500-yard offensive games. Alabama comes in, maybe a little bit of a letdown after the blowout of USC. Could be there for the taking for a first-half scare, at least, if Western Kentucky's offense is able to do what it can do. Maybe put a little pressure on Nick Saban and his gang. I don't see Western Kentucky winning this. I don't want anyone to think I'm crazy and fill my inbox with that. But I could see Western Kentucky keeping this interesting and people flipping channels and seeing the halftime score and thinking, whoa, there's a dogfight in Tuscaloosa, because Western Kentucky certainly has the weapons on offense to hang with Alabama. I don't think they have the depth for the defense, but I'm curious to watch that to see how long they can hang in that game.
I think you talked about some games to watch that we mentioned that maybe aren't attractive, so to speak, like in ranked teams. I got two for you right now I'm going to throw out that involve well-known coaches that could be on the hot seat. I'm going to throw out one, Oregon or Virginia at Oregon. Bronco Mendenhall lost his opener against Virginia, also the opener against Richmond last week. They're probably going to lose against Oregon. That's going to be 0-2 start for Virginia and Bronco Mendenhall. You got to wonder if they're, even though he just was hired, I don't think he's going to be in the hot seat, but I think that's going to be an interesting situation. And then Washington State at Boise State. You know, and then a game that people may not be, it's 10 o'clock at, you know, Saturday night. But listen, you know, Mike Leach and Washington State, a lot of people felt like this team could find their way, you know, into the top 25 after their great start last year. They won 9 games, you know, and had a great, you know, bowl win over Miami. But they lost last week against Eastern Washington. Now they're going to face a Boise State team. If they lose to Boise State, they'll be 0-2. And I think then that was kind of last season just seems more like an apparition because, again, you got to wonder, you know, what is going on with Washington State and why Mac Leach can't seem to get things going. So, again, not great games in the sense of, you know, sexy games, you know, but games I think that are probably going to, you know, draw a little bit of some interest, at least from us media types.
Well, and, you know, obviously losing to the Spiders is never good, but on the Washington State side, they were everybody's favorite sleeper pick in the Pac-12. You know, the team that they were going to surprise people and watch out for them. And yeah, Washington, Stanford, and Oregon may be the top team, but watch for Washington State. And certainly did not look like that team losing to Eastern Washington. And as a guy that does bowl projections, if Washington State loses to Boise State, which is certainly a possibility, I don't know how they even play their way into a bowl game with the schedule they have remaining. They kind of needed one or two wins in these first two games, and it could be a long season for the Cougars if they are unable to get it against Boise State. That's one of the late games on Saturday. There's a few. Oregon and Virginia is another one. Maybe week three we'll have the big games, but we certainly found some stuff in week two to talk about. Matt, Sunday morning we'll do another post-game podcast. And we'll get that out there for everybody to listen to on Sunday so you can have instant reaction to the day in college football on Saturday. Something to do while the boring NFL takes over your TV. Editorial note there. But big day Saturday. You'll be in Gainesville watching Florida and Kentucky on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I want to see Luke Del Rio, see if he bounces back a little bit. He had a strong performance in his opener, but I think they need to have bigger plays, you know, more offensive opportunities. They'll be playing against a hungry Kentucky team that's, you know, coming off that bad loss as we described. And, you know, again, it's at the Swamp. Kentucky hasn't beaten Florida since, you know, early mid-80s. So, I mean, again, this is going to be an interesting game, but I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see what happens.
All college football is good college football, and it's better than the summer when there was no college football. For Matt Michelle, I'm Brant Parsons. Tell a friend, subscribe, share us on social media. We'll be doing podcasts all season long, reviews and previews, and we're looking forward to week two. Even if there are no big marquee matchups, we know it's college football, and we're happy to watch it. For Matt Michelle, I'm Brant Parsons. Thanks for listening to College Gridiron 365 podcast, brought to you by OrlandoSentinel.com.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Michelle. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.